Hi, I'm Robin.
And I'm Chris. Together we're the Gen X couple.
Hey, guys.
Take one. Hello, everyone.
So today we're bringing you a story so unbelievable you think we made it up, but we promise this one is 100% real. It's the tale of the Great Boston Molasses Flood of 1919.
Yeah, I don't even remember how we first heard about this, but the Boston Molasses Flood. But it was one of the food tours we took through the North End. Do you remember?
Yeah, I think it was on one of the food tours we took. Actually, now that I think about it, wasn't it the wine tour? Years ago, we went on a wine tour through the North End of Boston where we stopped at a bunch of restaurants and a packy to try some different local wines. And they also mixed in a little history in there. And I'm pretty sure that's the first time either one of us had heard of the Boston Molasses Flood.
Yeah, she called it a wine tour, but it was really just a bar crawl.
It was.
But you should probably tell everyone what a packy is.
Yeah, actually, you're probably right. Packy is a New England term that we use in place of liquor store. So packy is short for package store, which I also think is a New England term. Do they call it a package store in other parts of the country?
I have no clue.
Yeah. Well, but anyway, I'm going to use it in a sentence. I'm going to make a packy run. Do you need anything?
Thanks for that. And those of you who are not local to Boston, the North End is one of the city's oldest neighborhoods, known for its rich history with historical landmarks like the Old North Church, the Freedom Trail, and Paul Revere's house. It's also known for its strong Italian-American heritage.
Now that we are all on the same page, let's get back to the Boston Molasses Flood. It's a sticky situation that will leave you simultaneously horrified and amused. So buckle up, because this episode is going to be sweet, syrupy, and honestly a little dark.
Imagine this. A 2.3 million gallon wave of molasses racing through the streets of Boston at 35 miles per hour. It sounds like something out of a cartoon, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But this was no laughing matter. The flood left destruction, tragedy, and a legacy of lawsuits in its wake.
Now, I know what you're thinking. Molasses? That thick, slow syrup you pour over your pancakes? How does it flood with anything? How does it turn deadly?
Well, we're going to answer all of that and more. So sit back, grab a snack, maybe not something sticky, and let's dive into the incredible story of how Boston became ground zero for one of the weirdest disasters in American history.
Before we get to the big sticky mess, let's set the scene. It's January 1919, and we're in Boston's North End, a crowded neighborhood which was home to many Italian and Irish immigrants.
This area was full of hardworking families, factories, and businesses, and looming over all of it was this massive molasses storage tank, which was owned by the Purity Distilling Company. So picture this. The tank was 50 feet tall and 90 feet wide. And like Chris said, it held 2.3 million gallons of molasses, which is over 14,000 tons of molasses.
And here's the kicker. This wasn't just a food grade syrup for pancakes. Molasses was used to produce industry ethanol, a key ingredient in making munitions and alcohol, especially during World War I.
Yeah, but by 1919, the war was over, Prohibition was just around the corner, and the company had a surplus of molasses just sitting there. That tank, though, it wasn't exactly built to last.
Oh, definitely not. From the day it was constructed in 1915, there were problems. It leaked constantly. Residents say you could see molasses oozing out of its seams.
So instead of fixing the leaks, the Purity Distilling Company painted the tank brown, because nothing screams safety, quote unquote, like trying to hide a giant flaw with a fresh coat of paint.
Neighbors even reported hearing groaning and rumbling noises from the tank, but the company ignored all warnings.
The thing is, the tank was supposed to be filled with water first to test the tank before they filled it with molasses, but that was never done. So it was filled with 6 inches of water and never officially inspected before it was filled to the brim with molasses.
And that brings us to January 15th, 1919.
Yeah, it was a warm day for January in Boston. It was about 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and that might not seem warm, But compared to the freezing temperatures the days right before it, it was a big change.
And that temperature shift, it played a key role in what happened next.
Yeah. Also, that's New England for you. It can be 40 one day, it can be 60 the next, and then it can be 10 the next. You just don't know. But anyway, so here's a mini science lesson for you guys so that you understand why this even happened in the first place. At higher temperatures, molasses becomes less viscous, meaning it flows more easily. Heat energy causes the molecules in the molasses to move faster, weakening the intermolecular forces that hold them together and making the fluid thinner. And at lower temperatures, molasses becomes more viscous and flows slower. Cooler temperatures reduce molecular motion, increasing the resistance to flow. I hope that made sense to all you guys. So this principle played a crucial role in the Boston molasses flood. On that unusually warm January day, the molasses in the storage tank was heated for easier transfer, but the cold winter air outside rapidly cooled it once it spilled. So this cooling likely contributed to the molasses solidifying and slowing as it spread, making cleanup even more challenging. But we will talk more about the cleanup in a few minutes.
Now we're going to fast forward to about 12:30 p.m. on the day of the flood. It's lunchtime, the streets are filled with people. Suddenly, there's a deep rumbling, like the sound of a train, or survivors would later describe it.
Yeah, without warning, the molasses tank bursts open with the force of a bomb. A tsunami of thick, sticky syrup, 25 feet high at its peak, comes barreling through the streets at 35 miles an hour. Yes, molasses, a substance we think of as slow-moving, was now a deadly tidal wave running down the streets of Boston.
For comparison, Usain Bolt's top sprinting speed is about 27 miles per hour. So this molasses wave was faster than most people could run.
Wow, that was a good stat. That was interesting. So like we just talked about, molasses moves slowly in normal circumstances, but because of the warm January temperature, the stored molasses made it, made it behave more like water initially.
Buildings were crushed, freight cars were thrown off the tracks, and entire streets were submerged in molasses. The wave of molasses destroyed everything in its path.
And tragically, 21 people lost their lives, and over 150 people were injured. Most of the victims either drowned or suffocated in the thick syrup.
And it just wasn't humans. Horses and other animals caught in the flood couldn't escape either. It was chaos.
Aw, that makes me even sadder. Rescue efforts started almost immediately, but they were painfully slow. The molasses was so thick it made everything harder, walking, pulling people out, or even using the equipment.
Yes, firefighters, police, and volunteers worked tirelessly to free those trapped. But it wasn't just about saving lives. The cleanup was a whole other nightmare.
Once the floodwaters, or should I say molasses, receded, the cleanup began. Imagine trying to wash syrup off your kitchen floor and then multiply that by an entire city block. The Boston Harbor was brown with molasses for months. Nearby buildings were stained, and the smell of molasses lingered in the North End for years.
Yes, people reported smelling molasses in Boston for decades after the flood.
Imagine walking to work every day and getting hit with the smell of burnt sugar.
Yeah, some people probably couldn't eat pancakes for years after that.
I'm sure. Now, this is where the story gets even more interesting. The flood wasn't just a freak accident. It was actually the result of corporate negligence.
Yeah, the Purity Distilled Company tried to blame anarchists, claiming they had sabotaged the tank. This was a common scapegoat at the time, but the evidence didn't back that up. Investigators found that the tank was poorly constructed and never properly tested. And lawsuits, oh, they were legendary.
Yeah, over 125 lawsuits were filed, leading to a lengthy court battle. During the trial, it came to light that the tank had been rushed into service without proper testing, like we said a few minutes ago. The company claimed that the anarchists had bombed the tanks, but like Chris said before, the evidence overwhelmingly pointed to negligence. In the end, the court ruled against the company, awarding damages to the victims. It was one of the first major cases of corporate accountability in the United States, setting a precedent for future litigation.
The victims and families received a total of about $628,000 in settlements. And adjusted for inflation, that's around $9.5 million today.
The Great Molasses Flood might sound absurd, but it definitely left a lasting impact. It led to stricter building Oh my God, now I can't speak. It led to stricter building regulations and engineering standards. And it's a reminder that cutting corners, especially on something as massive as a molasses tank, can have catastrophic consequences.
And still today, there's a plaque in Boston's North End commemorating the disaster. It's a quiet reminder of not so quiet moment in history. We took a picture recently and Robert would post it on our Instagram if you want to check it out.
Yeah, I'll do that shortly. So what have we learned from the Great Molasses Flood? First, we learned never underestimate the power of molasses. And second, maybe don't trust a company that paints over leaks instead of fixing them.
And I would say third, that molasses can move fast if it wants to.
Yeah, depending on the temperature and that little science lesson I gave you, yeah.
But on a serious note, this disaster shows how important it is to prioritize safety. Because even something as sweet as molasses can turn deadly when negligence is involved.
And while it's easy to laugh at the idea of a molasses flood, it's important to remember the human cost.
But before we go, let's lighten things up with a couple of fun facts. Did you know the phrase slow as molasses in January became a dark joke after the flood? Ironically, this molasses was anything but slow. And cleanup crews, including sailors from the Navy, who hosed down the streets with salt water from the harbor. And to this day, some Boston residents claim they can still smell molasses on especially warm days.
Dad, I wonder if that's true. We've been in the North End many, many times on hot summer days, and I can't say I've ever smelled molasses.
I just smell garlic.
Yeah, I was going to say that there are... I don't even know how many Italian restaurants there are in the North End, which is why most people go there, to be honest. And that's all you can smell is the wonderful, amazing garlic and Italian food smells. So I don't think molasses is more powerful than that. And with that, that's it for today. And I would say if history has taught us anything, it's that truth is often stranger than fiction. And if you guys enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating on your podcast app, write a review, be sure to subscribe, of course. And if you guys have a weird historical story you want us to cover, let us know, because we're always open to ideas.
Until next time, stay curious and maybe avoid standing near giant tanks of anything. Next week, we're going to give you guys some interesting facts about St. Patrick's Day. And until then, see you later, alligator.
In a while, crocodile.